That was my entrance music. Hello. Hi. I have really, really been looking forward to this. It's really great to be here today. But for those of you who are thinking, right, who exactly is this joker? My name is Andre. I've been coming to Life Church for about a year and a half now-ish. Apologies if I haven't had a chance to say hello properly. But I've been coming for about a year now. And I originally came and got involved because I got involved in the Eccles community out there. I've been involved in that. As you can tell from my accent, I'm not a northerner. I'm originally from London. And thank you. And I came up about 7 years ago originally to do an Eden project in Oldham, then got a job at the Message Trust, for those of you know what that is, and then now work for a Christian charity in Salford. I became a Christian at 16, so that was about, well, just over 10 years ago now. And so that's just a brief overview of me. Now, I could go on. And whenever I'm preaching somewhere new for the first time, and this is the first time Life Church has dared to let me loose, whenever I preach somewhere new for the first time, I always say, oh, you know, tell a bit about yourself, you know, list a few good points. And I must admit, like, I always find that a bit awkward. I find it awkward because I really don't like talking about myself. You know, when someone says, how are you doing? I always say, oh, I'm all right, but how are you? Because I hate talking about myself. But secondly, you know, it's always a bit like, you know, tell the people why they should listen to you. You know, show off a bit, but be humble about it. And you know what I mean? And I've been to a few conferences where, like, people go, oh, you know, I'm amazing. I was preaching in this country. I was preaching at this conference. And there was only 4,000 people there, but 8,000 became Christian. And, you know, there, people were speaking in tongues more than English. You know, people who thought they were Christians repented. I mean, it was, you know, it was all popping off. Or, you know, they say, you know, you may not know this, but I'm kind of a big deal. I founded Eagles Wings Ministries or ShekinahGlory.com or whatever it is. And I always sit there and I always think, you know, I would really like if you just got up there and said, why are you relying on God's grace? You know, why are you flawed and just totally reliant on God, knowing that you're not worthy to be there, but God wants to use you anyway? And I always think I may listen a bit more if you started like that. So it's only fair that I put my money where my mouth is and list a few of my bad points. And I was tempted to get my wife to do this bit, but I realized we only had 35 minutes. But, you know, I could play the game and just tell you things that don't really matter. So, you know, I could tell you that one of my bad points is I'm really not a morning person. You know, when I get up, I'm not compos mentis. I can't really function. My friends and family have learned, just don't speak to me. There's cornflakes flying everywhere. There's milk all over my chin. And that's just when I'm trying to brush my teeth. And I just, wait. Not the best joke. But, you know, it just goes, I just really don't function in the morning. I remember hearing John Stott, who was a big theologian in the evangelical world, and he said, you know, he really believed Christians should get up and pray in the morning, which I just always struggled to do. And he used to get up at 5 a.m. every morning, apparently, and pray, and then take an afternoon nap in the afternoon. And I can honestly say after hearing that, I adopted one of those principles. But I'm just not a morning person. And while we're on the subject, you know, people who get up in the morning and start singing, not of God. Just throwing that out there. If we're ever at Transform together and God's leading you to sing in the morning, make sure he leads you away from my tent. That would be great. But I'm just really not a morning person. And, you know, I could say other stuff that don't matter. So, for instance, I'm losing my football skill as I get older. And some people used to say, I had the combined skill of Messi, Thierry Henry, and Zinedine Zidane. Thanks, Mum. But I've just totally lost it now, and I could do that, couldn't I? But I could also be a bit more real with you and tell you things that I'm really struggling with and places where I'm really flawed. And so, for example, I could tell you that I really, really struggle with money. And I've never been into debt, and I don't really spend a lot of money on food or clothes or anything, but that's kind of part of the problem because I need that control. I need to have a plan. You know, God, please use me. You know, take all the bad stuff, take the guilt, take the sin. But in this area, I really just need to have some control and I really need to have a plan. And I really struggle to let go and see what God is doing in that area. And this talk isn't about money by any stretch of the imagination, but just that sense of I need to have a plan. I need to have control here. Or I could tell you about the fact that over the last 9 months, I have been seriously broken by God. I mean, I thought I was flawed, but wow. And he's really just been challenging me in every area of my life. You know, the ambition, you know, ambition I have in my career, the stuff I want to get involved in at church, in the community, the stuff which I think I'm really good at. And I like the fact people look at me and go, Andre's good at that. God has really been challenging me, saying, where are you, you know, how are you looking to me in this? How are you looking at what I'm doing? Am I enough? How do you really look to me? And, you know, I'm fantastic at hearing the plan. You know, I do think that I stop and pause and listen to God. I'm fantastic at hearing the plan, but then I just get off and do it in my own strength. You know, I listen to him at step one, and then I do steps 2 to 10 in my own strength. And, you know, I always fall into the trap of thinking, right, when I get to this point, then I'll be happy. When I get to this point, I'll be really satisfied. And then a couple of months or years later, I get to that point and I think, nah, God, no, when I get to the next point, I'll be happy. And I'm good at listening to God, but then running off and doing it in my own strength. And in the busyness of life and in growing in my own gifting that I feel God has given me, I sometimes take my eyes off him. And I sometimes think I'm missing something. You know, I haven't quite hit the target. God, I want you to be the center. I really, really do. But I just sit there and think I'm missing something. I still haven't quite cracked it yet. I need that control. I need to have the plan. I need to have the safety blanket. I need to rely on my own gifts and my own strength. And God has really, really been challenging me recently. And has really been saying, okay, the next slide, please. This isn't working. God has really been challenging me. Yeah, and this phrase has really been going around. Focus on the plan maker rather than the plan. Focus on the gift giver rather than the gift. Now, how do I really put God at the center of everything? And maybe I'm the only one struggling with this. Maybe I've got this completely wrong, but I think there might be some people here. And, you know, you sit there and, for example, you might hear people in a testimony slot and think, that's amazing, that's a great story. Why isn't it happening for me? You know, I've really been praying, I've really been trying, but there's something just not quite right yet. Or God, I thought it'd be different by now. God, you promised it'll be different by now, and I haven't quite worked out why yet. And I want to do more. I want to put God at the center. Maybe some of us in here, you may not be able to relate to the examples I've given, but the feeling of I've missed the mark, I haven't quite hit it yet, or the feeling of I'm wasting time, or I'm feeling inadequate, or I'm feeling false. Everyone else seems to have the answer but me. Or when I reach this point in my life, I will be satisfied. And just that challenge of desperately, I mean, like I said, I've been here for a year now. I know that we desperately want to put God at the center, but sometimes it feels like we're not quite hitting the mark, or we run off and do it in our own strength, or in the busyness, we take our eyes off God. And this isn't a personality thing. You know, I'm not talking about people who like to have a plan, who like to be organized, then maybe, if you're anything like me, put the blinkers on and get on with it. You know, people who are spontaneous, they hear from God, and they're an action man or action woman, and they just get off and start doing it. You know, all of us can lose sight of God and then sit down at the end and say, I still haven't quite cracked it yet. There's still something missing. And so that's really what this is about. When I was asked to preach, I was given a different title, but I have rebelled. And this is it, really. So, you know, welcome to Andre's first and last preach at Life Church. But focus on the plan maker rather than the plan. Focus on the gift giver rather than the gift. And I really believe that in Joshua 3-4, which we're going to look at today, these are people who are learning how to do it and why it is important to do it. And I really think that can maybe speak to some of us here in that feeling of I haven't quite hit the mark yet, but I want to. Does that sound all right?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, there's no plan B, so better crack on. So in Joshua 3-4, this is where they cross the Jordan. There's an amazing miracle that happens. And this is a really important point because they've been wandering around the desert for 40 years. They've had no land. And now they're crossing. This is the moment. This is the verse. This is the point in time where they're finally crossing over the promised land. So it's really, really important. And I've only really got 2 points to share. So I might as well give them to you now. The first point is, I'm sure it'll come up soon. But the first point is that this story isn't really about the land. This is about God. You know, controversial point number one. I don't think this story really is about the land. I think this chapter, this book even, is not about the land. It's about God. And you'll see what I mean as we go on. And then my second point is that God looks for obedience, not skill. God looks for obedience, not skill. And so those are the 2 points, really. So if you're tempted to look on the Facebook or the Snapchat or whatever, you already know what I'm going to say. This story isn't about the land. It's about God. And God doesn't look for the obedience. He looks for skill. So just to show you that I'm not completely making it up, we will read Joshua chapter 3. I'm not going to read... No, I'm going to read all of this chapter. I'm going to read chapter 4 later. Thanks. So we're going to start from verse 1. And as I read it, I'm going to stop and pause and give some insight or whatever along the way. So do bear with me. We're going to start reading at verse 1. Building the suspense. Verse 1. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from... Sitim, that's a safe way to say it, Sitim, and went to the Jordan, and they were camped where they were camped before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went through the camp. Now, just quickly pause. Whenever you hear the number 3 in the Bible, there should be a red flag going off, because the number 3, we don't have much time to go into this, but numbers often, not always, but often point beyond themselves and are a bit symbolic. And 3 is a holy number. Whenever you hear number 3 in the Bible, something important is about to happen, usually. So, for example, Jesus died and rose after 3 days, even though it wasn't 3 full days, because it was late Friday to Sunday morning, but the number 3 really emphasizes significance. Paul on the road to Damascus, he gets blinded and he prays and fasts for 3 days. Something important is about to go down. And there's no exception here in this chapter. When you hear the number 3, something important is about to happen. So we'll carry on at verse 3. Giving orders to the people, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and a Levitical priest carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits between you and the ark. Do not go near it. Again, very quickly, just to highlight, the ark is going first. The ark is the place where God is very, very present. And sometimes there's a bit of a misunderstanding that in the Old Testament, God's presence was only in the ark, and the ark ended up in the temple in the Holy of Holies. And sometimes we can think, oh, that's the only place God was. That's not true. He's got the whole earth. But in the ark, he was very tangible, his very presence. His presence was very, very dense in this place. And so God's presence is going out first before the people. We'll pick that up a bit later. But carrying on from verse 5, Joshua told the people, consecrate yourself, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. The Lord will do amazing things among you. Joshua said to the priest, take up the ark of the covenant and pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up and went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all of Israel, so they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priest to carry the Ark of the Covenant. When you reach the edge of the Jordan's water, go stand in the river. Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. Just very quickly, God speaking, Joshua is obeying. You see that theme a lot in this chapter. But carrying on from verse 10. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he'll certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Gerashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. Probably should have practiced saying that out loud before this point, but there you go. You get the message. Verse 11, seek the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth and go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from you, from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And as soon as the priest who carries the ark of the Lord of the whole earth, not just the Lord of the ark, Lord of the whole earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will cut off and stand up in a heap. So when the people broke a camp to cross the Jordan, the priest carrying the ark of the covenant went ahead of them. Now, as we're going to learn in chapter 4, I just want to quickly highlight it. I mean, they were ready for battle. There were people that were armed, ready, and dangerous. They had their swords or bows and arrows or whatever it is they had, and they were ready for battle. Yet, even though the warriors were ready, the priest and God's presence goes first. Again, we'll pick that up in a bit and keep going. Now, the Jordan is at flood stage all during the harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away in a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowed down the Sea of Araba, that is the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite the Jordan. just to highlight, this is an amazing miracle. The river wasn't just trickling with water. It was during flood season. It was a flooded river. Yet God is still able to stop it, and they passed over on dry land, just emphasizing the amazing thing God did. Finally, just to finish this chapter, verse 17, the priest who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed crossing on dry land. So this is an amazing miracle. They're crossing over the River Jordan and God stops all the water. It's a flooded river. It's an amazing thing to have witnessed and to read about now. And like I said, I'm just going to really draw out 2 points. And the first point is that this isn't really about the land, it's about God. Not about the land, it's about God. And just to take a step back a bit, so when you ask people about the Exodus, which is what happened just before we read Joshua, if you ask people usually what happened in the book of Exodus, they'll say, oh, it's when God freed the Israelite slaves from Egypt and took them to the promised land. But we know that's not true because they don't reach the promised land. I mean, we're reading Joshua now. We know that they don't reach the promised land. But the story of Exodus is about a God who is intervening and freeing people. And the aim of that is to draw people to himself. They don't reach the land in Exodus. They don't reach the land in the first 5 books of the Bible. The point of the story is that God intervenes and draws people to himself. And what's amazing is that he saves them before they had the law. He saves them before they, you know, fully worship him. He saves them not because they deserve it, just because he is gracious. And God has always been a God who intervenes and takes the initiative. And we see that demonstrated fully in the cross, but God hasn't changed. He's always been the same. And I think sometimes as Christians, we can think the God of the Old Testament is angry and miserable, and God twisted his arm on the cross. And that is just not true. The cross fully shows who God is, but God has always been the same. And so you have this God who is breaking in their situation. He's breaking in. And the aim isn't to give them the gift. The aim isn't to take them to the land. The aim is to draw people to himself. And he gives them the law. And again, you know, the law wasn't oppressive. In the Israelites' mind, there was a God who was holy. They were sinners. They didn't deserve to know God. They didn't even deserve to know his name. And yet God says, I love you and I want a relationship with you. And in order for this to work, we need to follow some rules. And I'm going to call it the law. Again, we can look at the Old Testament and think he's oppressive, he's angry, he's giving the law. But actually, it's about a God who's saying, I'm always bringing people into relationship. And the cross is the fulfillment of that, where we see it clearly. But God has always been the same. But that's a bit of a tangent. The point is, in Exodus, God is drawing people to himself. The aim is not to give him the gift, it's to give people himself. Exodus 19, verses 4 to 5 says, you yourselves have seen what I did in Egypt, how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations, you will be my treasured possession. Numbers 15, 40 to 41 says, then you will remember to obey all my commands and you will be consecrated to your God. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God. Not I brought you out to give you land. I brought you out to be your God, to live among you. And this is a chapter about people who are focusing on the plan maker rather than the plan. They're focusing on the gift giver rather than the gift. It's about being drawn close to God. Because when we get to this point in the story, in Joshua 3, what's really amazing is they've been told the plan. I mean, they've been walking around in the desert for 40 years. They know the plan. They know what God's going to do. And they were ready, as we're going to read in chapter 4. They were warriors. They were armed and ready and dangerous. They were ready to fight. They had the gifts. They had the plan. Yet in this chapter, every step of the way, you know, they're saying, God, what are you doing now? What do you want us to do now? You go first. We're going to listen to you, even though we have the plan, even though we have the gifts. God's presence went first in the covenant, you know, just to emphasize verse 6. Joshua said to the priest, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people. You know, God went first. And this miracle is an obvious nod to when Moses took the Israelites from Egypt and crossed over the Red Sea and stopped the water. I mean, it's a very similar miracle. You know, Moses stops the water when they're coming out of Egypt. Joshua and God are stopping the water when they're crossing into the Jordan. And what is the consistent thing in that, other than water, obviously? The consistent thing in that is God. God is a God who continually acts. When he intervenes and saves people, he acts. And he is still acting, and he is the constant, and the aim is to draw people to himself. It's not about the gift of the land, it's about the gift giver. And the whole point of this story is they are learning to focus on God. Even though they had the plan, they were ready for battle, they had the gifts, they were ready. Yet they're still saying, God, you go first. What are you doing now? What do you do in this step? What do you do in that step? And I don't know about you, like I say, maybe I'm totally wrong, but I'm really good at knowing the plan and then getting on and doing it in my own strength. And in a culture which has so many resources, in a Western Christian culture which has so many resources, we can just hear from God and get on and do it and get on with it. And in the busyness of life, we sometimes think, God, I just feel like there's still something missing. I thought it'd be different by now. And in our control, in our safety blankets, in our ambition, in our gifting, in growing in what God has given us, we can still feel like there's something missing. And I just want to say very quickly, you know, I'm not saying wanting to grow in the gifts God's given you is bad. I'm not saying having a plan is bad. I'm not saying rolling your sleeves up and getting stuff in and putting God's word into action is bad. None of those things are bad. But when they cause us to take our eyes off God, then there's a problem, isn't there? Then there's a problem. And maybe when we sit there and feel like, God, I feel like a fraud. I haven't quite cracked it yet. God, I feel like I'm wasting time. I thought it'd be different. Maybe it's partly because we need to learn to focus on the plan maker rather than the plan. Focus on the gift giver rather than the gifts. This chapter is not about the land. It's about people learning to relate to God, even though they have the plan. Even though they're gifted, they have soldiers, they have warriors. This is about people learning to focus on God, even though they know all of that already. They focus on the plan maker and the gift giver. So that's the first point, really. The second point, just very quickly looking at this, the second point is, like I said, God looks for the obedience, not the skilled. God doesn't look for the skilled people, he looks for the willing people. God doesn't look for the brilliant, he looks for the broken. He looks for people who have humbled themselves, who know they're flawed, who know they don't deserve to be part of building God's kingdom, but he uses them anyway. God is looking not for the brilliant, he's looking for the broken. And what is really, really interesting in this chapter is that Joshua is exalted, not because he's a military leader, even though he's an amazing warrior, he's an amazing military strategist, as we'll see in the rest of Joshua. He's exalted here because he's listening to God. He's exalted here because he's being obedient. He's not exalted because of his amazing gift. He's not exalted because he's an amazing, skilled person. He's exalted because he is stopping and saying, God, what are you doing in this situation? God isn't looking for the skilled. He's looking for the obedient. Verse 6 again, Joshua said to the priest, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up and went ahead of them. You know, Joshua is listening to God and commanding people to do the same. Verse 9, Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. He listens and he does. He listens and he does at every step. Even though he knew the plan, he did it at every step, not just step one. He was focusing on the plan maker and not the plan. Okay, so we're going to dip in now into chapter 4. I mean, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, partly because of time, and partly because it's really in chapter 4, it emphasizes a lot of what's going on in chapter 3. There are obviously some unique points, but unfortunately we don't have time to delve into all of them. So I'm just going to read a few verses, starting from verse 1 from chapter 4. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and then tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests were standing, and carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you stay tonight. So Joshua called together the 12 men he appointed from Israel, one from each tribe. Again, God speaks and Joshua obeys. God says, do this now, and he does it. He's exalted because he's listening to God. Carry on from verse 5. And said to them, go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulders, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the place, to the people of Israel forever. We'll pick this up a bit later, but they don't only listen to God before and during the plan, even afterwards, they find a way to remember God and to remember what he did. We'll pick that up in a bit. Jumping down to verse 12, The men of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over ready for battle in front of the Israelites as Moses had directed them. About 40,000 armed for battle crossed over before the Lord to the plains of Jericho for war. I mean, they were ready. They were ready to fight. 40,000 people were ready to fight. Yet they didn't just say, I know the plan, I'm going to get on with it. They were learning to listen to God every step of the way. And finally, verse 24, just to finish off. He did this so that all the people of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. God is the one who did it. So just think, just to summarize, Joshua 3 and 4, they knew the plan. They were ready for battle, 40,000 men armed and ready to fight. They knew the plan. They had the gifts, they had the warriors, they had the soldiers, but they were learning to listen to God. They were learning to look at the plan maker rather than the plan. They remembered him before, during, and after. They set up stones so they would still remember what God done, even after it happened. They remembered the gift giver, even though the land was right in front of them. They remembered the gift giver. And Joshua was obedient every step. He wasn't exalted because of his brilliant skill talents. He was exalted because he was obedient and listened to God. So now what? What does all that mean? How does that help? What I want you to do is just imagine a situation, or maybe a couple of situations, where you really are wanting God to do more. You've really been praying about it. It may be at work, it may be in family life, it may be areas in church, it may be things that you're really, really good at, and you feel like, I could, you know, just smash this if I was given a chance. Or maybe a situation where you're struggling. But just imagine that situation where you really want God to break in. You really want God to break in. You've been praying for it. Now imagine what it would be like if God actually did break in. If all the things you've been praying for, if all the things you were desperate to see at work, at home, in the community, how you serve at church, imagine if God really did break in. So what I want you to do now, I'm going to ask you to do something. And I'm just going to ask you to do this for 1 week. I'm not going to ask you to do it for a year or anything like that. Just for 1 week, what I want you to do is every hour or every couple of hours or a few times during the day, whatever, I want you to stop and pray a five-second prayer. And I just want you to say, if the slide could come up, I just want you to say, God, what do you want me to do now? Just 5 seconds, not a long prayer. You can pray it in your head. What do you want me to do now? Or you may want to say that phrase, I want to focus on the plan maker rather than the plan. How do I focus on the gift giver rather than the gift? How do I focus on you in this situation, God? Now, you may be sitting there saying, Andre, my work's so hectic, I couldn't stop every hour and pray for 5 seconds. Or you may sit there and go, Andre, it's not really my style. I like to do a big prayer in the morning or a big prayer in the evening, right? Fine, put all of that down. I'm only asking you to do it for a week. Week afterwards, you can forget about it, but just for 1 week, find a way. Maybe literally setting an alarm on your phone, maybe writing this phrase out and sticking it on your fridge or sticking it on your laptop at work or changing the screensaver on your phone for a week. I don't know your timetable, I don't know your schedule, I don't know what works best for you, but somehow, once every hour, once every couple of hours, just say a five-second prayer. God, what do you want me to do now? How do I focus on the gift giver rather than the gifts and the things I'm used to doing in this situation? Just do it for 1 week and let's see what happens. Just for 1 week and let's see what happens. So just to summarize, I'm not saying planning is bad. I'm not saying moving in the gifts God wants you to grow in is bad. I'm not saying having ambition or milestones that you want to achieve in career or in church or whatever is bad. None of those things are bad. But when they cause us to take our eyes off God, then there is a problem. In Joshua 3 and 4, I would argue this story, even this book, is not about the land. It is about God. It's about people being drawn into God, a God who always takes the initiative, a God who's always loving, who always wants to build a relationship. He is the prize. He is the aim. And we see people learning in Joshua 3 to 4 to really focus on him through everything. And God is not looking for the obedience. He's not looking for the brilliant. He's looking for the broken. And I think that's good news. So our challenge, if I haven't said it enough, I'll just say it one more time. Our challenge, focus on the plan maker rather than the plan. Focus on the gift giver rather than the gifts. maybe the reason we're not hitting the mark is because we listen to God in step one and then forget about him in the busyness, in the resources we have, growing in our own strength. We just forget about him in steps 2 to 10. How do we stop and focus on the plan maker, even when we have the plan? Okay, what I want you to do is, if you're able, please stand. If you're able, please stand. And I just want you to close your eyes. As I was talking, maybe God has highlighted an area of your life, an area where you need a safety blanket, or in an area where, you know, you feel like, I know I could really smash this. God has really used me in this area before. Or maybe it's a bad situation or situation at home or work or whatever. And I really just want you now, just creating space for you to do your own business with God. Just want you to, you know, pray, to just lay that situation down before God. To just ask him to remind you that every step of the way to say, God, what are you doing now? Just want you to just say a few prayers, be a minute silence or whatever. Just pray to God in your head. And the music is going to start playing in a sec, but just keep your eyes closed. If there's any of us here who are just really, you know, God really just placed on your heart, God, I know you're trying to say something to me. God, I know that there's an area where I just want to see you break in, and I feel like I haven't quite hit the target yet. And you just, there was just something highlighted. Just as a response to God, I just want you to raise your hand. I'm just going to pray a prayer of you. Everyone's got their eyes closed. No one is looking. This is just between you and God. You know, either put your hands out before you raise your arm, just as a response to God. I'm just going to pray. God, I thank you for my brothers and sisters here, Lord. I thank you that you are a good God, that you are a God who uses us even when we're broken, even when we feel unskilled and untalented. And God, I just pray now that this week we will all learn to just really focus on you every step of the way. Lord, show us how to focus on you rather than the good gifts you give. Show us how to focus on you rather than the plans you've given us. God, show us every step of the way. Remind us to pray that prayer, to stop and refocus on you. In the things we're good at and the things we're bad at, just show us how to look to you more and more. I feel like maybe some people here really just want more prayer. If you make your way to the front, the prayer ministry team will come and join you if you come down to my right, your left. But just, even though the music's playing, some of us will start worshiping. If you really just want to have a space where you continue to pray, do business with God, then I really encourage you to do that.